Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
Happy Mother's Day to everyone. Isn't this an exciting day to have Mom Talk Radio air? Yes, indeed. You know, every 7 years, though, I'm going to tell you my Mother's Day dilemma. Every 7 years, my husband's birthday falls on Mother's Day. So we have to share the day, which kind of stinks as a mom because I want it to be mine. You know, we've already divided up Mother's Day so much where, you know, this morning I had to go to a brunch with my stepmother. And then this afternoon we have to do something for my husband's, you know, godmother. Anyways, it's just like all the other mothers in your life. And then finally at the end of the day, you're like, hello, it's my Mother's Day too. Well, thus it is. And it's also my husband's birthday. So as I am running out for Mother's Day cards, I also have to buy birthday stuff, and I have to stay up the night before Mother's Day to make him a birthday cake. All is very, like, I don't know, contradictory to Mother's Day, but I love him, so I'll share my day with him, I guess, for another few hours. Anyways, happy Mother's Day to everyone out there, and I want to remind and celebrate the fact that motherhood comes in a whole bunch of shapes and sizes, and you don't have to share DNA to be someone's mom. And I have two daughters that I love dearly that I are living proof of that, and children come into your life in a whole bunch of different ways. Through adoption, through surrogacy, through stepchildren, through loss, and a lot of gain in love. So happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, and I'm happy that you're sharing a little bit of your Mother's Day here with us on Mom Talk Radio. I want to mention really quickly a big thank you to a company that supports moms, and that's Premama. It's time to rethink your prenatal vitamins. If you struggle with giant horse pills or you're looking for care as you become a new mom, whether it's fertility, lactation, they have a whole line of supplements that are good for moms, and you can find them on Amazon.com or by going to drinkpremama.com. So we have a fantastic show lined up to celebrate Mother's Day today. We have the author of Oh Baby, a Mom's Self-Care Survival Guide for the First Year. And we're going to be talking a lot about moms and self-care because, after all, we're important people, right? Well, when we return, we have the author of Oh Baby, a Mom's Self-Care Survival Guide for the First Year, joining us right here on Mom Talk Radio.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
Self-care is so important, whether it's the first year or the 18th year. And what a better topic for Mother's Day than a little bit of a survival guide into self-care. And we're joined today by the author of Oh Baby, a Mom's Self-Care Survival Guide for the First Year, and the author, Maria Liamos Carboni. And she is here on Mom Talk Radio sharing her Mother's Day with us. So welcome, Maria, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why did you decide to focus on self-care?
Well, as moms, we are typically conditioned to put ourselves last. And especially during that first year of motherhood, you know, the focus is mostly on baby. And so it's difficult for moms to take care of herself after she's taken care of everyone else. And it's not just the first year, but beyond the first year, there's little time after taking care of everyone else to take care of ourselves. So many moms today are running on empty and feeling overwhelmed and exhausted. And then over time, those, you know, those feelings of unhappiness and that lack of fulfillment tends to catch up, and we're left feeling sort of exhausted and depleted. So it's an important topic to talk about, and especially on Mother's Day.
Do you think moms are still trying to be a, there's a certain, some moms who tend to like the martyrhoodness of motherhood. You know, I was with one last weekend, and all she could talk about was how busy she is and chaotic her life is. And I thought to myself, I think later on she's going to realize that that's not how we keep score.
Yeah, definitely. Because if you keep going that way, eventually you're going to burn yourself out.
Right. Absolutely.
You know? So, and so it's important to, you know, pace yourself, because, you know, if you put that kind of pressure on yourself to be that kind of, you know, superwoman and super mom, it's just going to catch up to you, and then you're going to be feeling depleted. You might even get sick. And, you know, that martyr, I have to admit, I was once that martyr mom. I felt that pressure to be, and, you know, to be everything and do everything. And that's where I made the error in taking that time for myself and asking for help when it was needed.
Right. So I think
it's important that we, you know, that busyness that we all have today, we've got to slow it down.
So what are your tactics in managing expectations of mom pressures? Like, are there things that you think about on a daily basis when you're faced with it?
Well, now my kids are older, so, you know, definitely I have more time to schedule in that me time. I think it's important to set aside a little bit of that time to either, you know, have a date night with your partner or get together with other moms socially, especially for new moms that first year. It's so important to find your mom tribe, you know, other like-minded women who you can confide in and talk to about, you know, kids, and but also about things that interest you as a woman. Many times I find that we do kind of lose a sense of ourselves after having kids. So getting back to who we are by doing the things that we enjoy and that bring us joy aside from our children is crucial.
And you talk a little bit about postpartum depression. Will you speak to that here and what we should be aware of when that enters into our life?
Sure. Yes, I personally suffered from postpartum depression. And I think a main reason that also happened, not only, you know, obviously the hormones and the lack of sleep, but also just doing everything, taking everything on myself. I think that's one of the things that not just postpartum, but for all moms at any age and stage should ask for help when they need it, and to, you know, minimize all the obligations that are put upon her. I, you know, had, you know, after 2 weeks of baby blues, they weren't going away. And I was feeling, you know, sort of in a depressive mood. I wasn't sleeping well. I was feeling a loss of energy and irritable. Those are some of the symptoms that women may face if they are suffering from postpartum depression. So if it lasts more than, you know, a few weeks, and it can actually happen up to 6 months after the birth of the baby. So if you're feeling that you're, you know, you're not a good mother, or you're feeling hopeless, or you should definitely see your doctor.
What do you think was the one tip or one thing that you did that got you through that first year?
Oh, boy.
Okay, I'll let you give me two.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it's actually, it's, you know, despite all of the craziness and the sleepless nights and the crying and the teething and all of that, just that love. I mean, it's as simple as looking at your baby and your child and just looking into their eyes and feeling that love and knowing that's what it's all, that's what's worth it. What makes it all worthwhile is seeing your bundle of joy.
Yeah, I have to say that, well, suddenly I was having deja vu moments of the first year of being a mom in my life, because I actually had three babies in less than 20 months. So So the first year, I spent the first 5.5 months pregnant with my second one. I adopted and got pregnant at the same time. So I actually spent like the first 6 months of being a new mom pregnant in my third trimester with a second baby. So I was thinking, as I was asking you that question, I was like, okay, how did I get through that? And I'm not really sure, you know.
I know, because it's a bit of a blur, right? Like, especially the first 6 months, it's like, I don't even remember how I got through. Like, somehow you find that inner strength.
Right. You know what, though? I remember I got great advice from, like, my mommy and me teacher. And she said that it's always important to remember that as fast as they enter a phase, they leave a phase. So if they're colicky, before you know it, they're going to be out of that phase. So the good phases last as long as the bad phases. And if you realize that, you know that they're going to quickly end. And just as much as you want the good phases to stay with you longer, the bad ones will leave just as fast. I want to let everyone know the book title is Oh Baby, A Mom's Self-Care Survival Guide for the First Year. It's available at Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. And if you're at your in your car and you can't write it down, you can go to Mom Talk Radio. You can also find Maria at amotherworld.com, and it's a lifestyle blog. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much, Maria, for being here on Mother's Day, and happy Mother's Day to you. Hope you're enjoying your day.
Thank you so much for having me, and happy Mother's Day to everyone.
Thanks. And when we return, I'm going to dig into the archives and pull out one of my favorite Spotlight on Mom segments. So you are going to love it, I hope, as much as I do.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Today we're turning our spotlight on one mom who has a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, but she is not more importantly than being a mom. She is also runs a blog called foodallergybuzz.com. She founded that in 2008, and since then she's been helping moms and parents everywhere manage food allergies. And her sister also has a blog, peanutfreebaseball.com, which was founded also in the same year. And just really good stuff that has to do with food allergies. So we're putting the spotlight today on Jennifer, the founder of foodallergybuzz.com. So welcome, Jennifer, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
There have been times when I've been on an airplane and the flight attendants get on and say, we have someone on the plane with food allergies, therefore we're not going to hand out peanuts today. And you inevitably will hear one or two people sigh. Why is it so important that we recognize other people's allergies, particularly things like peanut allergies?
There are about 13 million people in the country who have food allergies. And I think the thing that makes it so dangerous is that there is no way to determine the severity of a person's possible reactions. So you have to consider that any reaction could potentially be life-threatening. And I think that is probably the thing that makes it most frightening to people. There's no way to know whether you're just going to have hives or whether that's going to be an anaphylactic life-threatening reaction. So you can imagine it creates a lot of fear for the people managing those allergies.
Right. So it seems like nowadays that, you know, there's all these restrictions on what you can send to your child's daycare or to the school as snacks because of people's food allergies. But yet when I was growing up, it didn't seem that we ever knew that anybody was allergic to anything. In fact, it was probably, you know, cool if you knew a kid who was allergic to something. Why is it that it's more mainstream now to know that there's children in your class that have allergies? Is it that we have more allergies, or it's just more publicized and well known?
I think it's a combination of both. The numbers of people who have food allergies has been on the rise for at least 10 years now. So you have about two or three children in every classroom on average who have food allergies. And also you're seeing people with more allergies. You might see a classroom where you've got children with fruit allergies, grape allergies, allergies to wheat, dairy, peanut. So it's a combination of both. And I think it's a really tough job for the schools to figure out the best way to manage all those different allergies in the same classrooms and in the same school.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your blog. What service and solutions and help do you provide parents on your blog?
Well, my blog is focused on food allergies in general. When I started it, there was not a whole lot of information available online at that point. What I could find was mostly about peanut allergies. So even though my child has peanut and nut allergies, I wanted to focus on all allergies because we all face the same danger, that is potentially life-threatening reactions and anaphylaxis. It's the same danger no matter whether you have a dairy allergy or soy or peanut or shellfish. So I tried to focus on I've tried to focus more on positive aspects rather than sort of dwelling on the fear aspect and the negatives and the restrictions. I started out sharing as many allergy-friendly products as I could, and as the years have gone on, there have been more and more people with food allergies and more blogs on the subject. So now I'm focusing more exclusively on consumers who are managing food allergies, both parents and adults who have food allergies. And I also have the sister blog. That's my second blog, which focuses on accommodations at baseball games for mostly peanut allergy sufferers, since we have peanuts and baseball kind of go hand in hand.
What do parents need to know if they suspect that their child has a food allergy? What's the first step?
First thing to do is to get an appointment with a board-certified allergist. A lot of people do go to a pediatrician. They can test, but pediatricians are not experts in allergies. Allergists are.
Right.
Historically, there's been a problem with sort of broad panels of testing for all kinds of allergies, and a lot of times you get false positives. So if you go to an allergist,
right,
they'll take your medical history into consideration, and they can help determine whether there really is an allergy or not.
So find the right doctor, and to find more of the right answers, you can go to foodallergybuzz.com, where you'll find Jennifer and all of her information. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have a link to your blogs on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we're going to speak with one teacher who actually became a self-made millionaire. We'll find out how.
Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have with us today a very important person who's doing important work in the United States, Whitney Ellenby, author of Autism Uncensored. She's a former U.S. Department of Justice attorney whose writings have been published in the Washington Post, law reviews, and other websites owned by the U.S. government and DOJ. She's the proud parent of a son with autism and founder of Autism Ambassadors, a venue through which she runs exclusive recreational events for over 700 families impacted by autism in the D.C. area. She's an expert on autism and has testified before the Maryland Senate, is a member of the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Council for Montgomery County, Maryland, and serves on the University of Maryland Autism Spectrum Disorder Advisory Board. She knows a lot about autism, and thank goodness there are people like her, because I am the aunt of two autistic children. So welcome, Whitney, to Mom Talk Radio.
Hi. Hi, thank you for having me.
They say give a busy person a task and it'll get done. And clearly you were graced with a son with autism and did a lot to help other parents with it. So what took you on that journey?
The truth was, first, I felt very isolated and alone as a mother. Once my son was diagnosed, I felt immediately cut off from all the other mothers who I had been going to the same, you know, kind of mommy and me in the little toddler music classes. And I knew something was off and that Zach wasn't following the routine, but I was in no way prepared to hear that he had this incurable brain disorder and that that was the explanation for why he was very, very different from his peers. And then there were certain things we simply couldn't do, like we didn't have time to do because he was in so much therapy. And over time, I came to realize that the most important thing, in my opinion, is simply that people going through this feel that they're not all alone, regardless where their children are on the spectrum. And so I felt compelled to write a book, a very candid book about autism, and also about 10 years ago to start these ambassador events so that we can all get together. And that's why they grew in number so quickly, and have a place where we can all be ourselves and nobody has to apologize for who they are, for who their children are, for how they feel about it, that sort of thing.
When you're a mom, you know something is not right. And it's so difficult to convince others that, no, this isn't just my child being tired. Did you learn something from that and advice that you could give other moms who just know?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked it that way. Nobody's ever asked it that way, which is, trust your gut. Here's the special part, even above what the experts are saying. So you trust your gut, and if you feel you need to, you get your child evaluated to see what's wrong. But then even when you're doing the interventions that are recommended by absolute experts, so for Zach, it was 40 hours a week in a closed therapy room, and I did it for years, and my gut was telling me that he plateaued at a certain point, but I overrode it, and I kept sticking with it, even though I thought this kid needs to get out into the world, and he needs to experience things, and he needs to apply these lessons more. I overrode my gut that what we were doing wasn't working because the experts told me that, you know, the data on autism means that this is the only way. And in the end, I wished I hadn't. So you want to balance what you're being told by experts, and you even want to balance the prognosis. I was told Zach might never talk, might not walk, all these things. All of that was wrong. So when you're dealing with something as mysterious as autism, or even with typical kids, you know your kid better than anyone. You are the expert. You always were. So don't be afraid to sort of shake it up, give your own instinct a try, because in my case, it was that instinct that rescued Zach. It was none of the interventions that we were hemorrhaging money on that were recommended by experts.
Right. And I agree. You never give up on that. So tell me a little bit about the community that you've created and the support, in case we have moms out there who are interested in getting involved.
Sure. Well, the first thing to know is I'm here in Maryland, and so the events I run are open to anyone who's impacted by autism, but here in Maryland only. I'm not nationwide. Mm-hmm. I would love to be. I would love to have a bigger presence and have other groups piggyback and copy me. But what I did was I started to reserve venues all around town, so like a gymnastic center, a pool, an indoor, an outdoor. And when you're dealing with public facilities, they're very willing to work with you and maybe even give you a discount because, quite frankly, they should be doing it. In my opinion, sensory friendly should be the law of the land, particularly given our numbers. So they've been very open to collaborating with me on, I want this splash park reserved only for families impacted by autism for an entire day. I want you to serve pizza. This is our taxpayer dollars at work. It's not just a charity. It's also these kids can't access a lot of the places even during the open hours that other kids do. So you start making those demands and you know the law, and the law is that our kids have every right to be in the same public facilities as anyone else. And you ask them, look, give us 2 hours of exclusivity because we need that, because our kids need to have a safe space of their own without judgment, and the parents need it as much or more, right? Mm-hmm. And then it started from that. So that is a way that other people could sort of duplicate what I'm doing. But then, of course, if you're in Maryland, just reach out to me through my author's page. And if you have a child on the spectrum of any age you're in, that's why I have over 700 families.
Wow, that's just amazing. What do you think is what some of the biggest challenges that that parents with autism children, autistic children face? Mm-hmm. And like, what's been your biggest, I guess, your greatest coping mechanism or management?
I would say the greatest challenge, to be really uncensored about it, is that there is no light at the end of the tunnel. There is no cure for autism, so you want to get the child with as many compensating and coping behaviors as you can. But the greatest fear is you know that there is not a recovery, so it's how far down the road of progress are you going to get, and what if, as happened with my child, they plateau and they simply don't get. And then the other great companion fear is the future. Zach is 17, so now I'm contemplating where is he going to live as an adult. He's going to need to live in an assisted living with an aide. I need to make sure it's the right aide. All of that is overwhelming, and it happens in stages. You hit milestones, and then, like right now, a friend was just crying to me saying that, you know, there's all these proms and graduations, but not for her child. Yeah, so that's the most important thing. Yeah.
So we're really lucky to have a mom like you that has created the support mechanism. The website to find Whitney is WhitneyEllenby.com. The book is Autism Uncensored. It's available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And you can find it on Mom Talk Radio. We have a link to Whitney right here on our website. Thank you very much, Whitney, for being with us, and happy Mother's Day to you. And thank you for serving so many mothers in the Maryland area and beyond. When we return, we're going to turn our attention to money and what teachers are doing to become self-made millionaires.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am excited to have on this Mother's Day show Hillary Gamm. She is the author of Billions Lost, The American Tech Crisis, and The Roadmap to Change. She's worked at virtually all levels of the tech industry, and she has discussed just about everything from offshore labor to higher education practices. And she is just one smart woman when it comes to technology. So welcome, Hillary, to Mom Talk Radio.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm a mother, too. So happy Mother's Day to all mothers out there.
Let's talk about girls and technology, because it seems like we're still playing the catch-up game. What do you think needs to be done to even the playing field?
Oh, great question. Women in tech, yeah. We've seen the numbers go down significantly since the 1980s, late 1980s, when we had about 25% of the tech jobs were females, and now we're down to, I think, around less than 10%. So a few things, I think, have to be done to kind of turn the tide, and some of the things that happened in the past actually affect why there's less girls going into the tech field and also less women working in technology today. So one of the first things I think that's important for people to understand is that we have to have good role modeling. So when we don't have women in technology that are successful and working and balancing, you know, being a mom and working, you don't have as many girls looking at that a career perspective as something that they might want to do. So that's really important. So as we are offshoring a lot of technology jobs in the U.S. and sending those jobs overseas, a lot of women who are mothers in their 40s and 50s in the U.S. have been laid off or getting laid off or being displaced. And so that's something that doesn't send a great message to our youth, especially for the women, in terms of a job that they might want to have, because they see their moms or their aunts or their friends not being able to maintain employment, or they see them not getting opportunities. So maybe they're getting passed over for promotions. Maybe they're not being able to be moved into maybe the newer technology or the more cutting-edge technology. So those are some issues, I think, that play out every day. From an education perspective, I think a lot of times we are in situations here in the U.S. where American kids sometimes are at a little bit of a disadvantage because we're not really teaching the technology at a young age. We're teaching them maybe how to use the technology. We're exposing them to using the technology, but we're not teaching them the fundamentals of necessarily coding or technology basics, you know, at a younger age, that then they can kind of grow through it, get an appreciation, and get interested in it. So by the time they're in high school, it becomes something that they're interested in or they've acquired skill, and then either want to take a job in technology or go on in higher education to study it.
Speaking of education, do you think coding is something that should be just another language that is taught in schools?
I actually think it should replace foreign language requirements in the U.S.
Wow, that's pretty bold.
I'll tell you why. I mean, we're in the digital age. There's a computer in every home. There's technology in every hand. And unless we prepare our youth for the questions and the risks and the ideas associated with technology, you know, as a society, you know, we'll be not in the best position to succeed. So we spend a lot of time right now in grammar school and middle school and in high school having foreign language as a requirement. But yet, when you talk to people who are from another country here in the U.S., they take out their phone, they speak their language, and out comes, you know, American English. And even when the kids are studying foreign language today, they're studying it very differently. They go on the internet and they go into translation software to come up with, you know, creating the sentences they're doing for homework. That's a very different paradigm than when I was learning foreign language, you know, many years ago. So that's why I suggest, you know, we give them the building blocks so that regardless of what job they take as adults, they at least understand technology basics.
That makes a lot of sense. Tell me really quickly in the last 2 minutes that we have a little bit about your book and where to find it.
Sure. My book is on Amazon. You can go to the website. I give all kinds of, if folks can follow me on Twitter, I give all kinds of good info. So like one quick thing for the moms out there that are listening. So any kind of technology with the blue screens isn't great for people's eyes to be staring at all the time. So like on the Twitter feed, I linked a article about the damaging effects of, you know, too much screen time for children and for adults and what you can do to prevent, you know, issues with too much screen time, or, you know, some information about gaming and some of the things we might want to do as parents to kind of get our kids off the technology and focus more on social skills or soft skills. The book is about technology and how we've sent so many technology jobs offshore that we open up the U.S. to national security risks, but also data privacy risks.
I want to get in there before I have to say goodbye, where we can find the book. It's at billionslostbook.com. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today and have a very happy Mother's Day. Hillary Gamm, thank you for spending your Mother's Day with us. And when we return, we have Tomlin Langland with us. And when we return, we're going to turn our attention to money and teachers.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
I am delighted on this Mother's Day to talk to Timelyn Langan. She is the money magnet and teacher. She's a public school teacher and a self-made millionaire. She's done amazing things. Every time I talk to her, I'm just like, whoa, I am blown away. She has had real estate investments and multi-family properties all over the country, and she's joining us here to talk about your child and their spending habits. So welcome, Timelyn, back to Mom Talk Radio.
Oh, it's so good to be back. Thank you so much for having me, and happy Mother's Day, everyone.
Well, thank you. So tell me, like, as parents, how can we change the spending habits, our spending habits, so that we're teaching good ones to our kids?
Well, you know what? That is an excellent question, and I talk about five paradigm shifts that's good for financial well-being. And one of the biggest things for children is the old paradigm is spending money makes you feel better. And we need to shift that thinking and start modeling behavior, which says that money is a tool in your life, not a tonic or a tranquilizer, so that money is used for a purpose. There is a reason for spending. There is a purpose for all the things that we do. And we need to be very strategic about that and make sure that we also, money is a way of achieving our goals when we are using it as a tool.
Wow.
Establish your goal and then take steps to make that goal a reality.
So how do you, you know, most people have a fear of money. How do you get over that fear?
You know, fear is never healthy. Fear is what I call false evidence appearing real. And sometimes fear is also an emotion. And I talk a lot about emotional spending, and money is emotional. And so we have to get over that and start to separate and just make a line of separation between your feelings and your money. And you should never let your money follow your feelings. Never do that. So if you're, let's say you're having a bad day, you've had an argument with someone close to you, or you've had a bad day at work. Some people actually go shopping. Instead of doing that, think about some alternatives. Maybe go to the gym and box it out, or go for a run, call a friend, listen to some music. I talk about many different things you can do in the book to overcome, to compensate for that, and not just spend.
But is it okay to be happy when you're making money?
Oh, absolutely. We want to be happy. The book Live Like a Millionaire on Your Budget means that, yes, you want to be happy. And the reality is we already have enough to be happy. The old paradigm is I do not have enough money. The new paradigm is I already have enough to live well and happily. And if you're living in a first world country, the United States or the Western world, you make more money than half of the people on the planet. If you own a car, if you make $8 an hour, you are already richer than half the people in the world. So it's simply maybe you want more money, and that's a healthier paradigm, but you already have enough, way more than most people.
Wow, that's amazing that you talk about that. So we just have a 1 minute left in the show. What is the most important thing that you need to remember when talking to your kids about money?
Remember that they're modeling your behavior. So set good examples for them. And I'm a teacher, so we talk a lot about modeling for our students. Model the behaviors you want your children to learn.
Well,
and then have conversations about them.
Well,
and
that's
they too can live like a millionaire.
Yes, absolutely. And nothing is beyond being attainable. Your book is Live Like a Millionaire. Your website is livelikeamillionairenow.com. And what are we going to find there when we go?
Well, you will find lots of information. As a matter of fact, we have videos and information to teach people how to indeed use your mind over money to live like a millionaire on your budget. So there's videos, there's resources that are there for free. And then we're getting ready to do something for people who live in the Los Angeles area. We're going to be having a big event on June 9th. And we're going to try to see if we can even stream it over the internet. So we've got a lot of good things in store. And the goal is we just want people to live financially successful lives and realize that we working people can do it on the salaries that we already have.
Well, really good advice. And thank you for sharing that on Mother's Day. And I would like to just remind everyone, we have a link to livelikeamillionairenow.com on Mom Talk Radio. And for all the moms out there, happy Mother's Day. Thank you so much for sharing some of your Mother's Day with me. And I just feel like I am the most fortunate woman in the world for having the four children that I do. And today I'm celebrating being their mom. So thank you, everyone, for listening to Mom Talk Radio. We'll see you again next week right here on this station or on iTunes.